The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren LaGiudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. How's it going? What's up in your Misfit world? I just finished two really big shows, one in Philadelphia at Punchline Comedy Club, and then one in New York City at Brooklyn Art House, and it was the Misfit Variety Show. It was exciting to see how it fit, and after being on the road in April, to see like how it translated in the hometown crew. And it was freaking awesome. It really did. And I was so excited how it just, like, there were not people there you would traditionally think as misfits, and yet they vibed with what I was doing. And that was just wonderful. In New York, we worked with the Idiots Hour to do, meaning I should say Misfit Variety Show is me. I get people to be on it, but it's me behind it as the producing force. And I think that might change, but we'll see. I worked with the Idiots Hour. As you saw last episode, we talked a bit more about that. Me, Jeff, and Matt, who worked it. Jeff Quintana and Matthew Silver, who work with the Idiots Hour. So we did this whole big event called the Mad Masquerade, which was really cool, as we brought back the dress-up booth, which I had back in the day for this party called Victoria Party. And we brought back a dress-up booth, and people were able to like get in their own unique persona. And people did it. Like, people definitely dressed up, and that was super cool. And we also had performance artists walking around, and that's something that I think I would love to do again, both of those things. I think they're going to become part of the show, which means it's more work because I got to get like find the people. And then also I got to like lug all the stuff around. But you know, ain't no free lunch. So if you're going to make it cool, you got to put in the extra elbow grease. So I'm recovering from that. And also just trying to figure out, like, I want to share that with people. I just don't know how. Like, how do I share the experience that we had that night in a visceral way with people who weren't able to be there? I don't know. I'm thinking about that. Also, I'm in the last part of a crowdfunding campaign. It ends on October 10th. We're going to have a little online party celebration. I'm so excited. I'm excited for it to be over because it's so much work. But, you know, I think something I'm learning, and this is important for misfits, is the power of asking. Amanda Palmer wrote a whole book about it, The Art of Asking. She runs her whole business, her whole art practice, through Patreon. I'm simply doing a crowdfunding campaign for one project, but the practice of asking people to support what you're doing has been very good for me. And I realized I should have been doing it sooner. I'm like, how do I do this? Or I got to think about involving more people. That's, I think, definitely the next step, is how do I create a bigger team? Because I think as misfits, you know, we have these crazy ideas and we go out in the world and we make them happen. We're driven to do it. And we have been so hurt in the past by people telling us that they're crazy or wrong. So then we just end up working by ourselves because we're too afraid to ask for help. We're too afraid of being rejected again. Are we going to be hurt yet again? And so there we go, working by ourselves again without any help, not getting sleep, working ourselves to the bone. And yeah, I think we need to do better in realizing we're not alone. I mean, if anything, the Misfit Variety Show makes me feel that every time I'm on stage. Like, I'm not alone in feeling these things and feeling like I don't quite fit anywhere. I'm not alone in that. And other people like want to be a part of that. And I need to just like open up and accept it. I don't know exactly practically what that looks like, but it's where I think we all need to work on that. Let me know what you're thinking about that, because I feel like I really need to open up more to how much people are interested in what's going on. And it's okay to invite others in. That is my 2 cents for the day. Before I go into our interview with Brittany Floyd Mayo, I'd like to encourage you to rate and review the podcast because social proof is very important for misfits. Misfits trust other misfits to know what's good. Also, you could sign up at laurenlogie.com for monthly recaps, or you could sponsor a podcast. We're making it accessible for individuals or companies. And if we get our sponsors, we will put this out more often. It goes out every other week and about, and we'll put it out more often. So just go to laurenlogie.com, click on listen podcast and contact us there. All right. Today, we're going to interview Brittany Floyd Mayo, who is the founder of Trap Yoga Bay. She created this yoga brand out of a need that she felt herself to be able to connect to herself and her power. And she's going to talk all about that in this interview. She's an incredible entrepreneur, motivational speaker, and a dope human. I think you're going to love hearing about how she built this brand from the ground up, from a very personal experience, a misfit experience, if you will, that she was having in the world. And it's a very personal journey, but also very inspiring and helpful to everyone out there who is trying to do something truly unique and different. Here we go with the interview with Brittany Floyd Mayo. Thank you, Brittany Floyd Mayo, for joining us on Misfits Making It.
Thank you.
Yay. Now, you are Oakland originated. Originally. From Oakland.
Born and raised in Oakland, California.
I used to teach there. I taught high school chemistry there after college for 3 years.
Wow. Which school?
At Oakland Street Academy.
Oh, okay. Right down the street. I'm from West Oakland, so you were not too far from me.
Yeah, not too far. Millionaires of Potter Street Academy. What high school did you go to?
I went to McClymonds.
Oh, wow. Cool.
From Oakland.
Dope. You're from Oakland. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, what high school? Like, are you in the hills?
Right. Exactly. That's always what tells people, like, where in Oakland, because different high schools kind of indicate a different experience. I am from where they make the best of the best of me. I am from West Oakland.
Love it. And so where did your yoga journey begin? Where did you first discover yoga and wellness?
Yeah. Yoga for me, I would say, like, my first interaction with it was actually in college. I went to college in New Orleans, and I brought my from Oakland to Oakland attitude with me, and got into a fist fight. And they were like, look, girl, you are too bright. You are too smart. You are going to ruin your life with that anger. And I was mandated to take some sort of anger management. And I had a few choices, and I opted for yoga. And I'm really grateful that it happened to me in that way, because the first class I felt nothing, second, nothing, third, total waste of time. It wasn't until about my sixth class that I really just started to feel something move and shake inside of me. And had it not been mandatory as a part of me staying at the school, I might not have continued to pursue the practice to the point that it began to transform my mind and my thinking.
That's amazing. And then where did you continue? Like, did you continue right away, or there was a break?
Yeah, no. So it moved. I was moved for sure. And so what I ended up doing was changing my major.
Wow.
And doing my senior thesis on how yoga can help people who are going through transitionary periods in life. And it was like, here's the hint. We are always going through transitionary periods in life. And you would think I would have, like, kept with my practice, but I didn't. I got married. I had 2 kids. I totally forgot about the one thing that I loved so much, that, you know, we tend to trade in ourselves for what we believe is love, or for what we believe is title or accolades. And I was no different. It wasn't until about 2014, 2015, when I was filing for divorce because that marriage had become abusive, that I asked myself, hey, when was the last time you felt like you? And the only thing I could think of was me on the mat. So that's when I decided to really pursue yoga for personal reasons. I went to India and studied at an ashram and became certified in yoga, not to teach other people, really only because it was the cheapest and safest way to travel and learn yoga at the same time. I had no idea the steps that I was taking that felt so random, but was constantly getting me back to what I believe is my path.
That's great. Where in India? Because I actually, it's funny. And I, after Oakland, I ended up in India as well. I was working at a nonprofit doing HIV yes. work. I know we've parallel lives here. So.
This is insane. Yeah. So I went to Rishikesh.
Okay. Okay. Cool. I was in Bangalore.
See, and I always say if I were to do it again, I would have gone to Boa. I'm like, because then you get the beaches.
Yeah.
But I'm like, maybe I would have been distracted because Rishikesh was way up north. It's like near Nepal and yeah. the Himalayan foothills. So it's quite different experience from those who I know who were in the south, but we went where we were supposed to go, didn't we?
Absolutely. And it's beautiful up there. And I've heard, and not as hot. So, you know, you did it right. It's always
hot. It wasn't hot. I mean, it was like, it was Southern heat, like a Southern American heat. It was totally tolerable.
Yeah, that's great. That's amazing. That's super fun. What was I going to say? Oh, no, India was interesting for me because I felt like I went there being like, I don't want to do yoga because everyone else is doing yoga. But then I have like someone, I ended up doing a Bharatanatyam dance there randomly. So I was like alone in Bangalore doing this fellowship. And so I was like, my aunt does this class, you should take it. So I took her class and then she got me into yoga. It was like that. But what I loved is that the like, and I was like, oh no, am I becoming a stereotype? You know, but it was just so good. It was really good. And the teachers there don't worry about being sued as much. Like in America, everyone's very litigious. So they would just press
oh, yeah.
you
they don't
up.
Even touch you.
Yeah. They're just like, you know, straight up.
I kind of liked that though. I remember one of my instructors there was like that. Like, you know, like you did something wrong. He's like, they're like kind of popping you with the stick. You know, they're like, no, move that, touch that. And you're like, you're not getting it. So then they're just like pressing on you. But you really feel like you're getting the heart of the practice.
Absolutely. And because sometimes you just need someone to like put you in the right position when
Yeah. If you've never been there, you don't know what's possible for you.
Yeah.
So I wish that on us all.
And then that's what you do now. You essentially push people to go where they need to go in many ways.
Yeah. I like how you say it. We, you know, in my company, we have these things called ratchet affirmations, and Sophista Ratchet is all about our brand. And I love you. You're like, that's what you do. You help put people in their place and put people where they need to be. And I'm like, yeah, in my company, we say, you know, I just put holes in their place. Absolutely. that is what we do. Socially, physically, spiritually, emotionally, that is really in essence what Trap Yoga Bay is about, putting people in their proper place, putting holes in their proper place, which is the place that we have designed for ourselves, not what society has put us in. Mm-hmm. To choose our own boxes, to choose our own molds, to choose our own lanes, and to get in them.
Yeah. Well, I love, you know, I create characters. So I'm so curious how you created your persona, your Trap Yoga Bay persona. How did it come about? What was that thing?
I know. Well, when I first discovered that that Trap Yoga was going to be a thing for me, I remember I was cleaning up my house and I had some like music going on, and you know what it's like when you are like first seriously immersing yourself into the practice. It's like yoga every day and everything is an opportunity to do a move or a pose and so I was just kind of in that mood. And I remember like moving my body like I was dancing, like the way that I learned when I went to college in New Orleans, like bounce music, which is like twerking and just kind of like free form. I think it's, I feel like it's like the black version of ecstatic dancing, right? Mm-hmm. And then I went into a yoga pose like immediately afterwards and I was like, oh, wait, this is something. And then that was just kind of how I practiced on my own, how I did my own thing. And then I had a friend who had bought a dance studio and just needed to fill her roster. So she asked me if I could come and teach a class. And I said, yeah, but I kind of want to do my own thing. And she was unimpressed. She was like, I don't give a damn what you do. Just come. Let me put something on the schedule. And, you know, I said, okay, well, this is what I envision. I'm going to call it Trap Yoga. It's going to be, you know, before I didn't have a DJ, it was like, I'm just going to like make a playlist. And I taught it. And I think that should have been my birthday. That is the day that the Trap Yoga Bay persona was born. That is the day where I felt like I found my purpose and truly came alive.
Wow. Now, I know what your Trap Yoga Bay persona is like. What can you explain to people who might not be familiar what your Trap Yoga Bay persona is like?
Yeah. A $5 word that I would use to describe it is irreverent. We have all of the spiritual principles of yoga and mindfulness. Even after college, I went on and got a master's degree in positive psychology. So it's all of that infusion of how the mind works and the spirituality and the embodiment of self. But I like to speak in a language that sounds like our favorite rap lyrics. I like to be culturally relevant. I like to force people to think. If everything is just so properly put in its place, our brain ignores it. And I want to show women, when you show up authentically, you'll be a force that can't be ignored. So if you're in my class and you think you know yoga, or you've never been to a yoga class and you don't know the language, and I say, okay, well, our next pose is about to be downward facing dog, AKA my favorite pose, but a free pose. You can't ignore that. You can't ignore that, right? Or we're like, okay, our next pose is going to be called a forward fold, AKA secure the bag pose. So it's right. It's making yoga less serious, more culturally relevant, and much more approachable. And I think that that is the thing that has been holding so many people back from really getting the benefits of the practice, feeling like they don't belong. I want everyone to know you belong in this space. And even if you come to my class and you don't like me, because that happens a lot, great. Now you know what you don't like. Go find what the hell you do. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being a part of someone's self-discovery and them noticing, I don't like this particular style of teaching, or this particular style of yoga, or the teacher, or music, or whatever. I'm not for everyone, but I will make you think.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And then when did you start? You're teaching this class, you know, you feel like you really found something. Mm-hmm. When did you realize like this was going to become big?
Ooh, it actually happened quite quickly. Mm-hmm. So we taught the first class, or we like put the first class out there, and we being me and my friend who owned the studio, and the first class, 93 people showed up. It might've been 96. God. Either way, it was in the 90s. And so we were like, people want this. We are onto something. And then maybe I had been teaching for about 2 months, and I got a call from 2 Chainz' team, and they were releasing this album called Pretty Girls Like Trap Music. And I got to fly to LA and be a part of that. And I was like, okay, you know, this is cool, but maybe a one-off. And then a couple of weeks later, I got called to open up for Erykah Badu in Toronto. And then I was like, okay, okay. And that is when I said, I'm incorporating. I'm dropping out of med school. This is what I'm going to do. Everybody kiss my ass. I don't care. So it was a lot. It was a lot of that. Like, and whereas, you know, I admire people who have this like really beautiful laid out game plan, and I've become much more strategic about the future of the brand. But in the beginning, I was just showing up and saying yes. And baby, I didn't choose the trap. The trap chose me.
Wow. Wow. So you were in med school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Where you're like, were people like, you can't do that. You can't quit med school, or, you know, all that.
Oh, they were like, you've lost your mind. Do you know how much money you're going to lose? And I made triple what I would have made as a nurse anesthetist in my first year. So I was like, this is me patting my eyes with dollar bills. Oh my God. So sad. So was not sad, not sad at all. Yeah. So it was, you know, a big thing for me, because remember, I told you I was in getting a divorce. So I'm in med school with 2 children under the age of 6, in the middle of a divorce, living back at home with my grandmother, of all people, because I had lived in the South after school. So when I left that marriage, I had to come back to California. And so people were like, honestly, they're like, you are making one fucking bad decision after another. Like you make a good choice and then you make a bad choice and then you make a good choice and then you make a bad choice. And I was like, listen, if I fail, that's on me. Mm-hmm. If I succeed, that's on me. But I'm going to be responsible for my life. And what's interesting is some of those same people now are like, we knew you could do it. And we always believed in you. And you're like, of course you did. Of course the fuck you did. So,
right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And taking all the credit and you're like, I don't remember that way. Totally. So funny.
Totally don't remember it that way. Not even a little bit.
That's great. And then you started, where did the events come in? Because actually that's where I first got to know you, was through an Eventbrite webinar, and you were talking about these incredible events you do. Yeah. Where did that come in the matrix?
Well, events were from the beginning. The first event, like I said, sold out and did great. And then what was happening was I just wanted to visit some of my friends that I hadn't seen in years. Right. Because mm-hmm. after college, everybody kind of disbands and disperses, and I'm married with kids. There's nowhere where I'm going to go. So I was like, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I could visit my friends and not have to come out of pocket for it? So I was like, okay, well, I have friends in Atlanta, I have friends in Houston, I have friends in Denver, I've got friends in Miami. And I would just post on Eventbrite. Just be bold and brave. Hey, like, here's an event. I'm coming. Trap yoga. And really only wanted to be able to cover my airline and my hotel and some food so I can get into the city. But the events just kept getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, I would like meet a DJ and I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Well, now I have a DJ. And then the event would get bigger. And then I'm like, okay, oh wait, you messaged me because you want to sell, you know, your body butters or your products at my event. Maybe I'll put out something that says, does anybody else want to sell? And then it gets bigger because we create a vendor row. I allowed space. I never allowed myself to be limited by anything just because I hadn't thought of it before. This mm-hmm. was something that I let grow and I let birth itself and I let develop. And I just kept saying yes and being brave. Not everything was a hit. I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll do like an after party and we'll do like trap karaoke afterwards. Flopped. No one, mm-hmm. they're like, no, girl, stick to the yoga. We don't want that. And really, like I said, just showing up in cities, I would tour for 3 years straight. That's how we built the brand. That's how I got such a huge following. And I would be in a city from Monday to Sunday. And Tuesday, I would teach a really small class and I would stay behind and take a ton of pictures. And I would have them all, you know, say, hey, post it to your story. And then on Wednesday, I would do radio interviews from just like reaching out via DMs so that we can get on the airwaves. So then that's how we would take over a city. They're like, oh, they're watching their Instagram stories and like a bunch of my friends are at this event that I didn't know about. And then they hear me on the radio. Wait, what's this? And then we would take a day, and then Friday and Saturday, we would hit it. 4 classes back to back on Friday, 5 classes back to back on Saturday. We would see something like 6,000 people in a week. And I mean, I would just be so exhausted. I couldn't even hold my own luggage after that. But I was determined to get the word out, to take over cities, to build a brand.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And it's like, it's because it's not just like a yoga class. It's like an experience.
No. It's like an interactive, immersive experience.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. And so it's like, and it's also bringing people who are not traditionally attracted to the yoga and wellness space.
Yeah. Over 75% of the people who come to my yoga class have never been to a yoga class before.
And how do you keep, because, you know, it's like, I feel like a lot of, you know, I've dipped in and out of yoga classes and like this competitive thing starts to emerge. And how do you keep that? Because you must have people who come into your stuff again and again. Like, how do you just keep it from becoming like competitive in that space? And how do you just keep that at bay?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, the biggest, baddest motherfucker in the room is me. So try me. Like, honestly. And that's part of the allure too, because there are people who want to compete, but it's like, who are you going to compete with? And then on the other hand, it's mostly, more often than not, someone who doesn't want the attention on them, you know? And so we help by, we keep the lights down low, and it's kind of like almost like a club atmosphere. There are no mirrors. You're focused on you. And I say things in the class like, and if you mind your business and keep your eyes on your own shit, you wouldn't have anyone else to compare yourself to. So you come to this class, the lights are low. I'm the only person that you can see, like really the only person that you can see. I've got this big energy, you know, all of this excitement. And even if you're an amazing yogi, are you a twerker? Are you a yogi and a twerker? I doubt it. So there's so many different components that's happening there that there really just isn't enough space for that sort of toxicity to show up.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so you're just like doing so many things that respond exactly to the kind of person who's coming to your class. Mm-hmm. How do you figure out like what those things are?
I think it's just intuitive reading. I'm really good at like reading body language and things like that. I'm also a confidence coach. And so we were hosting a graduation for some women who were graduating from program. And we were saying one word for them. And this one particular woman who had never heard before said mother to the graduate. It's just like an affirmation piece. And from that one word, I was able to derive, oh, you must be her mother. You see her as your equal. You're very proud of her. It's just intuitively knowing and being bold enough to be wrong, not saying every prediction I have is right or any sort of those things. And, you know, my class also has like this huge comedic effect to it. It's almost like when you go to a comedy show, a stand-up comedy show, you know, like the comedian might come for you. I will come for you. If you're in my class and you're like barely moving, I say, okay, bougie bitch in the corner. Like, what's up? You don't want to be here? You don't want to be here? And that just helps us kind of like just break it and let it go. Or like if a girl is working really hard, whether she's doing quote unquote good or not, I just love the energy. I am known for running up to your mat and just laying on the floor with like just watching you and being like, everybody pause, stop. I'm in awe. Do you see her? Like we have instances where I'll say, hey, like stretch your stuff. I'll have everybody clear out the way. It's really, when I say interactive, it's really interactive. And one thing about me is I walk into a room and there's something about me that just power grabs. Like I just soak it up. And I've been like that almost my whole life. And I think what's beautiful is I have that knowledge of the effect that I have on people, and I skillfully redistribute that power to the people in the room. And so we all feel seen. We all feel loved. We all feel empowered. And I think that that is one of the things that makes me as a yoga teacher unique, and the experience something that you would just have to see for yourself.
That's super cool. So I run a room, comedy room in Little Italy, called Capisce Club Misfit Comedy Space. And we have a lot of introverts who come who would never go to comedy, because we're creating the other thing. We're very positive. We're very inclusive. We're very like, it often becomes like a dialogue sometimes between comedians and the audience. It gets very collaborative space. Yeah. And that's very unusual. And it's like when you make the other, people start coming. Because there are people looking to engage. They just don't know how or where because they don't feel comfortable.
There is a place for counterculture.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And and what's super cool is that your brand like keeps growing, and there's so many things that you all are up to. Yeah. I mean, now you have an app.
Yeah. So now we have the Trap Yoga Bay app. I have broken down all of the key components that makes that 1 hour session so amazing. And now we work through it like as a 12-week program. So all of the things that make people feel excited and, you know, just like turned up and empowered, we've picked out the science of it and created a 90-day confidence accelerator. So it's just like, if that 60-minute class made you feel great, imagine what I can do in 90 days. So we have that. I've also been taking on a lot more speaking engagements. We spoke about it before we started recording, but I just got back from Mississippi where I spoke at the Money, Purpose, and Success Conference. And it was 300 Black women entrepreneurs from Mississippi. And I was their closing keynote speaker. And it was just so beautiful to be in that room because I am a yoga teacher, but I also am so much more than that. In the same way, I allowed my brand to grow, and I'm going to continue to allow my brand to grow. I'm allowing myself to expand. And it's not just about, oh, wow, I'm really good at teaching yoga. It's I'm really good at running a business, and I'm really good at building a team, and I'm really good at producing an event, and I'm really good at building community, and I'm really good at boundaries and giving myself those accolades and that support so that I can, you know, grow. Because there are so many people waiting for all of us to become who we are so that they can get the validation or permission. And I take that very seriously.
That's incredible. And, you know, one thing that often people will say, like, who are on the sidelines, who like want to do something, they're not sure. They're like, but then how do I know what to do when? Like, how do I, like, you're doing this and you're doing that. How did you know to like change? You know, how did you know to shift? What can you say to them? Like, how do you know how to, you know, let it grow and flow and change and yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. Even when you're on top of something, you know, it can be really scary to say, well, I finally got my footing here and I don't want to pivot. Listen, if you don't change, the world will change around you and your ass will get left behind.
I mean, look at COVID, you know, we were all doing live events and then
Exactly. And that's when I really leaned in heavy towards my coaching, which was when COVID happened, because the world is changing. And so I think it's that. And then also following your juicy yes. When you're offered an opportunity or when you have an idea in your mind, if you're afraid, that's not a reason to say no. But if you're like, wow, if this happened, it would be a game changer for me or for the people I serve, then absolutely do it. The worst that could happen is you don't. That's the worst that could happen. But the next, or what we think is the worst that could happen, is that we fail. Yet again, there's no such thing as failure. It's just lessons and opportunities to pivot and try something else for ourselves. So, keep it fresh. Do not get comfortable and follow your juicy yeses. Those would be my like pinpoint pieces of advice.
Yeah, I love that. And then when you were building your brand those 3 years and you had your plan, your takeover city takeover plan, how did you come up with that?
The city takeover, it really was, like I said, I started off with just wanting to visit friends. And then when I started going into cities that where I didn't have friends in, like Charlotte, North Carolina, and Chicago, it was asking people. I would go online and I would say, hey, this was fun. What's the next city? And I would and if I didn't trust a city, I would ask for support. Someone would say like Indiana. And I'm like, Indiana, I don't know about Indiana. And I would DM the person and say, hey, you say Indiana. I don't know anything about your city. Will you help me find event spaces and small entrepreneurs who want to work with me? And if I got that sort of support and I was able to lean in on people who said, hey, we want you in our city, then I would do that. Another thing I would do is I would say yes to other people's tours. So I went on tour with Sheila Marie and she has this beautiful brand called Curvy Curly Conscious. And so I would let them pay for my flights and my hotels. And I would test markets. I would do their event and then I would stay for an extra day. And then hopefully they could get the word out and set out a class. If the class sold out in that city, then I'd come back and I'd make it bigger the next time. But if not, thank you for your time. I learned something valuable and I went back home. Yep. So it's really just, again, leaning into opportunities and creating them for yourself.
Yeah, that's great. And how long did it take you to get that like such great idea? Like Tuesday, you know, is a small class. Wednesday, you know, radio interview. You know, how did you till you like sort of like this is the formula?
Trial and error. Learning that like, you know, booking a really big studio on that Tuesday and then realizing, okay, only 30 people are going to come because not a lot of people in this city know me very well yet. The way that I would leave a city and then I would get hundreds of DMs saying, when's your next class? I can't believe I missed it. Ah, cool. Give them the FOMO at the top, not for the next time. doing things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Super smart. Just like watching what the result is of X and then just, you know, just planning for the next time, which I think, you know, so many people,
what other way do you learn?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I think, you know, like I'm certainly guilty of this. I just beat myself up and then I'm like, well, I guess I don't know how to do this very well. And then just sort of don't, I will eventually, I'm someone who's an action oriented person. So I will like improve and iterate and change, but I get a lot of shame in the meantime, you know, which makes it harder to activate. And some people just then don't, because some people just stop. I guess that's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can stop if that's not what you want to do anymore, but if it hurts you, the idea of not achieving something, then you're going to do more damage to yourself by, you know, stifling you. One of the things that I think is really important, and I tell people this all the time, I don't get to speak for anyone else. A lot of times we tell ourselves no, and no one said that. And so I encourage women in particular to be brave enough to ask the question and let them tell you no. Because more often than not, we've shut ourselves down. We've pushed ourselves out. We've closed book by just assuming what someone's going to say in hopes of saving ourselves embarrassment. So ask for the support, ask for the questions, DM people, ask them if you can pull up to their event and offer something, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. So that's just, and you must see this a lot in your confidence coaching. These kinds of blocks. Yeah.
That's probably like the number one block I get.
Great. And really. And then like, and how are you working with people on that? Like, what's the program like?
Yeah. So Get With The Shift, my 90-day confidence accelerator. Really, it's like I said, it's just like the Trap Yoga Bay class deconstructed with all of the positive psychology built in there. It's got community and all sort of things. So typically we only launch maybe 2 to 3 times a year, and we always end up with about 200, 300 applications. We only take 20 women. If our heart is just bleeding, 30 max. I have a coaching team that supports us through all of it. You have to apply, you have to interview, and then you wait while we try to configure a group for you based off of certain personality traits that and themes that we see coming up. And then once we get your cohort together, you go in and we identify people, say, hey, what we need from you is we believe that you're going to be the biggest transformation. Are you down to be the case study? And so it's like their work gets viewed live by me, and everything else is them working amongst each other because the magic is in community. We go through everything from helping them uncover what it is they actually want and need in life. You'd be surprised by how many women don't even have true clarity about their desires. A lot of our desires are based off of bullshit rules that society told us should be things that we reach towards. And we don't stop and ask ourselves, is this what I actually want for me? So that's the first thing I do. Help them discover and decide, what do I actually want for me? And then we spend the next 11 weeks helping them get the tools, community, and support to actually go and get those things.
I love it. Because this is, again, the anti, like every, a lot of so many things are just like, Marg, we'll take everyone. And it's just some like cookie cutter video program. And this is just like so like personalized and intentional. And like,
oh, this is so personalized.
Yeah. Like you can't lose. Like they cannot not work because you're just like in it.
I just got a message from a woman who graduated from program. And when she came into program, she was a real estate agent having a tough time selling houses. Mm-hmm. And she said, I feel like it's because in every room I'm in, I become what I think they want me to be and not who I am. And so why not just be who you are? She acknowledged, I don't know who I am. And I'm afraid of being rejected. And we spent her time convincing her that you can't be for everyone. If you were for everyone, you were for no one. So go ahead and niche down and dichotomize yourself. And the people who resonate with the authentic you, they are going to rock with you, and they are going to make sure you are good. And everyone else who's misaligned, they'll fall off. And she just messaged yesterday to say, hey, can I come and jump in the meeting with the new cohort? Because I just have to tell them, you know, I've been meaning to come back, but I've been so busy selling houses. It's just
amazing,
you know, and it's just like, that's the thing. And I say, with Get With The Shift, we get you everything you want, which is money, power, respect, and the things you actually need, which is peace, love, and joy. That's the purpose.
I love that. I love that. And it's like, we all get so afraid to be who we authentically are because we're afraid people aren't going to like us, but they can still sniff it out among, and they're not going to like you anyway, because they can still sense your, that's who you are. So it's
exactly.
Like,
exactly. Cause who you are at your core, it yeah. takes too much thinking to put a mask on constantly. Yeah. So you're better fit just being yourself.
Yeah. Hell yeah. So we have a question/mini segment. We called Misfit Moment, the moment when you knew the traditional life was not for you.
School!
Yeah!
I know. I don't think that that's just one succinct instance. I think it's a revelatory kind of things as mm-hmm. iterations. Because if you ask me mm-hmm. when I was 14 or what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said I wanted to be a motivational speaker. I didn't know what I wanted to talk about, but I always knew that.
Wow.
I was a part of this leadership development wow. program, and I used to organize protests and all kinds of things. I had a light side and a dark side. On one side, I was just like this fearless leader, and on the other side, I just like had so much anger. But and so mm-hmm. I knew that there was going to be something extraordinary about my life even then. And then I wanted mm-hmm. to deny that, and I wanted a traditional life. When I went to college and got married and had kids and became a social worker, I mean, like, calmed it all the way down. And there was this moment where I kind of was having a very lucid dream that, like, I just didn't exist anymore. And that was a wake-up call for mm-hmm. me to go find myself, because I was very lost. And then I thought an extraordinary life was going to be in medicine, and, you know, I'll be in the top whatever percent, and I'll graduate at the top of my class. And then I realized that that too was self-limiting. That too was me deciding a career path that was admirable, that was something that people would congratulate me on. And I think it would have been after my first trap yoga class, which was February 2016, that I was like, nothing about an everyday life, nothing about a normal life, nothing about mundaneness or things that are palatable or acceptable or predictable is for me. I am going to not only craft the life I desire, but I'm going to let it unfold itself and trust that it will happen so beautifully. So I think that those are kind of like those pivotal moments that led me to write here.
It's beautiful. How do you get that such like trust? Like, where does the trust come from?
I think it comes from, because I've been asked that a lot. I think it comes from being at the very bottom, being in a place where you kind of have nothing, and knowing that this is probably the worst that life can get, right? I grew up in foster care, and so I've been used to liking something and everything being like, just, you know, you like this home, and then you come home from school one day and your shit's in a trash bag, and they're like, yeah, you got to go somewhere else. So I think that there is some, you know, fearlessness, that has been embedded in me. And I think where I'm grateful for myself is that also could be a trauma response. And I've done a lot of personal work and personal development to not let my hypervigilance and my willingness to hit the ground overtake me and stop me from creating a stable life for myself or my children or the women that I serve. So I think that trusting yourself comes from allowing yourself to free fall, hit the ground and go, oh, I didn't die. Bet. Mm-hmm. I can do anything. Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. That's awesome. We have another question we do called Misfit Inspiration. So when you're at the ground, you know, you're there and you're, or, you know, the up, there's always going to be lows. There's going to be like highs and lows and disappointments. In those moments of disappointment, how do you keep yourself going? It could be like a quote or a book or movie.
Yeah.
What have you?
I keep myself going by reminding myself again, like, this isn't the worst. This isn't the worst. The absolute mm-hmm. worst thing that could ever happen to me is not trying and failing. The absolute worst that can happen mm-hmm. to you is to not try.
I love it. I love it. So just keep that in mind. I have another question I'd ask, which we'll probably put a little bit before this one in the final edit, is, so you're growing your brand and then you have to start building a team. And when did you, it's like when you finally have to be like, I need help, and then you need to commit to help.
Yeah.
Supporting that. What was that like for you?
Yeah. I love that you said commit to help, because I used to play this very toxic and dangerous game called Who Can Do It Faster, where I was still very tightly wound and fearful of things not working out, that I would hire people because I was exhausted. Right. And then I would mm-hmm. play this game saying, I'm going to give you this assignment, but then I'm not going to trust you. You'll say you can do it tomorrow when you clock in, but I'm going to do it overnight. And then I'm going to look at you like you don't really, you shouldn't be here because you're not as committed as I'm committed. Who wants to play that toxic game? It was terrible. It was terrible and expensive and exhausting. I mean, like, that's, I think a lot of entrepreneurs suffer from that, just that mistrust and fear. And it, one of the things that I had a business coach who really helped me with, she said, if you can get someone who can do the task 70% as good as you can, then you trust them and you let them do it. If you can't trust them, fire them. If you keep finding people you can't trust, the problem is you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about
easier said than explained, but yeah.
Totally. And you had a business coach. And so this is a thing that people as well, like the importance of like getting good advice and asking for good advice and getting coaching. And there's like so much like fear and mistrust and also shame around that. Mm-hmm. How did you come to that and how did that go for you?
I actually had to be chased down. I had met this woman and she was phenomenal. She was actually coaching someone else and they had an event and they booked me. And afterwards we went and had lunch and had an amazing conversation. And she said, hey, I really think that I can take your business to the next level. I really think that you're sitting on a multi-million-dollar brand and you might be playing smaller than you think you are. And I was like, yeah, thanks. No problem. Thanks. Lunch was amazing. Thank you guys for booking me. The invoice is going to clear, right? All right. And, and she just knew a lot of people and kept sending messages through them saying, hey, tell Brittany when she's ready to be a millionaire to call me. Hey, thinking about Brittany, will you let her know when you see her? Oh, I saw you in her stories. Tell her I said this. And one day I said, oh, damn it. Okay, Sally, you swear to God. And this woman was very special because she's a business spiritualist coach. And she believes anything that's happening in your personal life is going to show up in your business. And lo and behold, mm-hmm. without me telling her anything that was happening in my personal life, she picked those things and showed me how they were blocking my business. One of the things that I feel confident and comfortable sharing is she's this notion that I had subconsciously that I have to fight for everything I desire. And that was hurting my business because what does that mean? I can't find ease. I can't find comfort. But even worse, that means when there was ease and calm, that is when I would upheaval and turn my business upside down and start acting a fool and doing all of these sort of things to create chaos because I function well in chaos. And so uncovering that belief and spending time working with her to extract that notion, my business became a multi-million-dollar business and I do not stress nearly as much as I did in years past. Listen, we're all smart people. I believe that we can figure it out. But if I have to give up 20, 30% of my profits for 6 months to get someone who can help me get where I'm going to get one way or another. But maybe it would take me 7 years and I would spend $500,000 in lessons. Give that woman, give that man their money. Properly vet them, trust them, follow the process. But the way to exponentially grow is through coaching and mentorship. And don't think and expect that you can just say, hey, let me pick your brain. I hate that. Someone's like, let me pick your brain. I'm like, let me get the fuck away from you. Right? Because
no one's got time.
No one's got time. And so I tell people, we've lost the art of internships. We've lost that art. I don't know what happened. I have friends who, you know, have phenomenal businesses in e-com. And I, as a woman who owns a company who has made multi-millions, will message that friend and say, hey, I'm down to come to your city for 3 weeks, a month, and you can treat me like an intern. And my friend's the one that I did that to, she was like, why? Are you crazy? I'm like, because I recognize that there's so much I could learn by just showing up and giving you my all and to not take anything from you and gain everything, or at least a lot of the things that I would need to be successful as I move into that other space. You don't have to pay me. Actually, I'll pay my own flights, hotels, all those sort of things. We've lost the art of asking for help, asking for qualified help, and being of service to get the knowledge that we desire. I think we've lost that. And no one's asking me for advice, but that would be my biggest advice for entrepreneurs. Go be of service to someone who is overwhelmed, but a genius.
Cause it's like, there's all these stories of DIY, DIY everything, DIY film, DIY, you know, businesses, whatever it is. And it's like, but the truth is no one's really doing it themselves. Cause you're always getting,
no one's really doing it themselves.
There's always a community.
There's always a contractor. There's always a friend. There's always a cousin, a sister, you know, all of those sort of things. When I wanted to learn how to better film my content for coaching, I had a friend who was a photographer. And I said, hey, can I be like your best boy? Can I be your lighting assistant? Like, because there are things that I will learn just by being in the vicinity of your documentary shorts being filmed. Some of that will translate into me making phenomenal coaching content, which will translate into me being more self-sufficient, or at least knowing what to look for when I hire a video editor.
Heck yeah.
If you can't afford coaching, go be of service to someone who is excellent in their craft, and don't half-ass them. Treat them like they're paying you $1 million.
I love that. I love that. I have a question from one of my characters for you. Candace Twyla is here. Candace is an influencer. She has long blonde hair and lots of makeup. Hey, Brittany. I'm working really hard on Instagram, and I am doing all the things that I feel like everyone else is doing, but I'm not getting followers. I don't understand. I feel like maybe I just came into the game too late, and it's just wrong timing, and that's why I can't get a following and become an influencer of influencing. What should I do?
I think what you should do is make sure that you are focused on doing the things that feel good to you. If you are doing all of this ducking and diving and things to do to get people's attention, it reads that way. And then you're watching the clock and you're having a hard time because you're looking for validation outside of you. Do things that feel good to you and affirm yourself. And what you'll learn is that the right people will find you, and they will be qualitative people and qualitative brands.
Wow. Wait, so I just thought we were supposed to, because success is likes, and isn't that how I thought it was great when we got outside validation? I thought that's how we get good. I'm so confused.
Outside validation teaches you what other people like about you. But do you like the things about you that other people like about you for the sake of them liking you? Or do you like yourself because You do what feels good to you.
I like it when they like me, I guess. You know,
it's okay to guess. And that's why we ask ourselves those questions. Maya Angelou, she was a phenomenal poet and storyteller, and she defined success. And she said specifically, success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it. Notice that she never mentioned it's other people liking you, other people liking what you do, and other people liking how you do it.
Wow. Okay. I am feeling something. I haven't had this experience before. I'm going to go over there and close the bathroom door. Okay. Thanks so much, Brittany. Bye. Bye.
Okay. Yes. Enjoy your trip to the bathroom. Bye.
She's a mess, Brittany. You've destroyed her. She's
just a wreck. Just a wreck. A wreck.
Cool. So where should people come find you, find Trap Yoga Bay,
yes.
All the things.
I like to make it real easy. At the very minimum, you can Google me. Life has been good. I have been active. On Instagram, you can find me as Trap Yoga Bay, TikTok, YouTube, all of the places. It is the same handle across the board. Thank you so much for having me and for introducing me to other characters and all of your really great, amazing, and thoughtful questions.
Of course. It was just such an honor to have you. I can't wait to follow you and see what else you're up to and as you grow and develop. And yeah, honor to have your wisdom.
Thank you. Until next time.
Yeah, until next time. Yay, Oakland.
Yay, Oakland. And India, apparently.
And India.
And now LA. Here we are.
And now LA. Here we are.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.